There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Yeah, once again, still not a question, but the way we start Midday Mobile on this Wednesday, a couple hours of live local talk. I'm glad you're here. It's you and I and guests for the next 2 hours. You're a big part of the show at 343-0106. 343-0106 gets you through on the text line, of course, gets you through on the phone line. And also remember, if you miss any edition of Midday Mobile or any of our other programming, those podcasts are up on our website, fmtalk1065.com. Click the link for podcast, find your hour, find your show, and get what you need, or you could subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher for those. All right, lots to do on today's show, and I want to get started here because so many questions for Quinn Hillier, and he is joining me in the studio, not on the telephone. Good to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot, Sean. Glad to be here.
Author of Mad Jones Heretic, and now the second part of the trilogy.
Mad Jones Hero, out at Amazon.
All right, and I know this, I remember this from somewhere. There will be a third for this trilogy thing, right?
Yes, indeed, which actually will be out in just a couple of weeks. It will be called Mad Jones Agonistes.
All right, very good. So you got to get your reading done for the first and second so you can be ready for the third of this trilogy. And I want to talk a bit about writing. So not just in novels, but obviously you write for national publications. And I want to start off with, I want to take a time travel. We're going to do two things here. I want to go back in time to something you had put in for national publication in a blog post back in, it was June of 2006, and then bring it forward. This was on the American Spectator over at spectator.org website, a blog post filed by this man right here, Quinn Hillier. And you're talking about a meeting or an event there in the Rose Garden where you were there and you had President Bush was there, Brett Kavanaugh was there.
Justice Kennedy was there, and right? I was there in about the sixth row as a guest of Brett Kavanaugh.
You wrote this. I'm just going to read through. You're saying, by the way, now Judge Kavanaugh acquitted himself, pun sort of intended, very well indeed at the swearing in, with very appropriate and wise and respectful words about the judge's role and the necessity of humility, etc. Then you went on to write, Quinn, he will make a superb judge and, perhaps down the line, a superb justice. Wow.
So June 1st, 2006, I was already thinking about Brett Kavanaugh as a possible not just judge, but justice on the Supreme Court, and wrote it, and
there you go. What was it back then? Why say that? What about him?
Well, he was young enough. He was only 41 at the time, so I knew he would have a chance to develop a record as an actual judge on the second highest court in the land, which was what he was being sworn in for that day. And I had confidence that he had the background, the academic background, and the professional background, and the intelligence that he would likely put himself in the top tier of judges, and that at some point down the line he would certainly be on a short list somewhere for the Supreme Court. And
look at there.
And there you go. I was right.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at this because obviously now, if y'all have not been keeping up with the news cycle since Monday evening about 8:25, something like that, our time, when President Trump announced Brett Kavanaugh as his pick for the next justice on the Supreme Court. I'm going to quickly run through the left's protest against Kavanaugh. I think it's highly predictable. I think it was highly ridiculous with the fact that they had made up signs, and for every person the president could have nominated, they were already, you know, in opposition to. That all is playing out as the left and the Democrats or opposing Kavanaugh. But the other side of this is what has been very interesting to me, that those on the right that have opposed Kavanaugh, that they are worried about the president's choice of Kavanaugh. And part of this is the left saying, hey, Kavanaugh is nothing but the attack dog from back then, of Ken Starr's attack dog. He had him turn him loose on people. To people on the right that say Kavanaugh, an apologist and a friend of the Clintons. I mean, you can't be both, Quinn.
You can't be both, and both of them are absurd. And my column out today at the Washington Examiner explains why the left's attack is absurd. And again, I happen to have firsthand knowledge. Very much into Clinton research mode.
Yeah, talk about what a lot of people don't realize. We talk about your time on Capitol Hill, but in the journalism field, you happen to be in the backyard of the Clintons.
Yes, well, I had been one of the sort of second-tier researchers pretty much against the Clintons on Capitol Hill, and then I got back into journalism and was hired as an editorial writer and columnist for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, mm-hmm. Back right in the heart of Clinton's home state. And I certainly, you know, kept up research into the Clintons, separating wheat from chaff, as it were, rumors from real facts. And that was certainly not all I was doing there, but I kept up and expanded my contacts. And there was a book that came out by Ambrose Evans Pritchard that was, I think, called The Secret Life of Bill Clinton. And it was one of the sort of most anti-Clinton conspiratorial works. And the Wall Street Journal, the first time I'd ever written for them, commissioned me to write a book review of this book. And in doing so, I kept finding, you know, he did a lot of good original reporting, but he would draw conclusions that weren't necessarily fully supported. And so I had to go research behind him to see what was and wasn't believable.
Right.
And in the course of doing so, I asked enough of the right questions of enough of the right people that ended up the folks in Ken Starr's team. Ken Starr was the independent counsel who had done the report against Bill Clinton. The higher up said, "Well, for the questions you're trying to get answered, you really need to talk to Brett Kavanaugh."
Who is working as part of the team with Starr?
Yes, he was about the. He was not Starr, and he wasn't Starr's chief deputy, but he was in the very high third rank of the very big Starr in investigation. He was like a co-number three person in the Starr office. And so they gave me to Kavanaugh, and, you know, you're not supposed to, as a prosecutor, give privileged information, but they had Kavanaugh get on with me to answer stuff that was in the public realm, but I was having trouble cross-referencing.
Mm-hmm.
And or that was in the Starr report that it was unclear whether Pritchard's complaints were valid because there seemed to be holes in the Starr report, and I needed somebody to walk me through it.
Right.
And he said, "I'm not going to give you anything that I shouldn't give you, but I will help. You know, we've got footnotes here, but
that's what this means. That's what this means.
Okay. And
that's
some,
important. I mean, that's
yeah. And in some cases, they had footnoted things that were in the public realm, but this is before the internet. Even though they footnoted it, I couldn't get my hands on it.
Right.
So he said, "I will. Okay, I've got copies of this thing here that is footnoted. You couldn't get it. I will read you this public document that you can't get your hands on." So he walked me through a lot of these questions, and in doing so, what I was struck by was that he was not an attack dog out to get the Clintons. He was certainly not somebody who was exonerating the Clintons. He was just absolutely dedicated to getting the facts, the actual facts, right, and to dealing with them fairly. And so in the questions I was asking, it happened to be that he was slightly more exonerating the Clintons on a few particular questions than he was convicting them. And yet, I watched CNN the other night, and somebody says that he was Ken Starr's partisan attack dog against the Clintons. I said, that's not true. And then all day on CNN yesterday, they kept saying he was the lead author of this Star report, and that wasn't true.
That is not true.
That is not true.
And we can come back from the break. I want to address the fact that there's the left's attack on Kavanaugh, but there's been some on the right that have attacked Kavanaugh as well and said, this Brett Kavanaugh was an apologist for the Clintons.
Absurd also.
All right. We'll tackle that when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right. Welcome back. 1220 FM Talk 106.5. And Quinn Hillier in studio talking about the piece up today at the WashingtonExaminer.com. Brett Kavanaugh was no attack dog for Kenneth Starr. You said CNN was making hay all day yesterday, saying that that's what Kavanaugh's job was. He was a hitman for Starr on this. He was the attack dog. He was the lead author of the report, and you're saying no.
No, as a matter of fact, I mean, it's very well established fact, and by none other than Bob Woodward, the journalistic hero of Watergate, that Brett Kavanaugh was not the lead author of the report. He was one of the lead investigators, but I forgot the name of the guy I listed in the column that was the actual lead author. And not only that, but Kavanaugh wanted the report to be organized differently, so they took out the salacious, explicit stuff and put that in a separate part in case Congress wanted to, you know, deal with it separately rather than
put talking about the allegations against Bill
against
Clinton.
Bill Clinton.
And it would come in a brown paper bag. Right.
Exactly,
back,
yeah, because they were so sexually explicit. And Kavanaugh did not like how the report was done. He wanted to put the facts against Clinton out there in an organized fashion like a prosecutor would or like an investigator would, but to at least give a chance for there to be some discretion as to how, you know, much of it was put out there for every six-year-old to read.
Right.
And he turned out to be absolutely right. He was the voice of wisdom and restraint, even though at the time he was a very young guy on the team. And if you read Woodward's book, he is basically the hero of the whole thing. Again and again, being tough on the Clintons, but not outrageous, and being judicious in saying, look, this is what is important and this is what is extraneous, and we don't want to crucify the guy. We just want to give the House of Representatives the information it needs so it can make the decision about what to do with it.
And doing the job in a factual and nonpartisan way. But here's what happens. I mean, we watch this. You know it. I know it. You try to walk the line of what's true. And in a partisan world, you often get stones from both sides. And that is true here. We've got the left, like you said, and this attack. Although I think if it was Kavanaugh, if it was anybody that President Trump nominated, they would be attacked by the left. Okay. CNN would be calling them whatever. It would be something else. But the attacks from the right were, it started Monday night, I'm on Twitter with it, and immediately the attacks from the right that Kavanaugh is this apologist for the Clintons. He is, he was part of the cover-up for the Vince Foster. You know, people, say that was a murder and it was done and the body was moved and all these things, and that Kavanaugh, because he came to the conclusion it was a suicide, then he's doing this, he's on the take.
Yeah, which is, let me assure you, absolutely, utterly insane. In fact, I heard Andrew Napolitano say on Fox News on Monday night that Vince Foster was murdered in the White House and his body dumped at Fort... Now,
at the park there, yeah.
At the park there, at Fort Marcy Park. Well, I've been to Fort Marcy Park. I have retraced the steps.
Yeah, you did this. This was your job to research.
This was my job.
You're no friend of the Clintons. You've always been on here beating up the Clintons. But you did the research on this, and your theory is...
I did the research on this, and believe me, I wanted to find nefarious doings with regard
to
Vince Foster.
You were coming at it from partisan, yeah?
Yes, exactly. And the White House clearly kept the FBI out of Foster's office. They rifled through and hid his files once his body was found. There was all sorts of funny business. But it is, there is not a sane human being who has looked at all the facts that now says Vince Foster was murdered, especially in the White House. And again, I went to Fort Marcy Park with the report in my hand. I walked all over Fort Marcy Park. I went through this meticulously, basically hoping I could find, even if they didn't murder him, that there was some other funny business, because right. I wanted...
You were motivated, and I mean, people have not been listening to you over the years here. I mean, this is... You had it. You were getting to the bottom of this. You were on... You were an attack dog against the Clintons.
I was an attack dog right? against the Clintons, but... This poor man, Vince Foster, committed suicide in Fort Marcy Park with his own revolver, and every there have been five investigations now that showed the same thing. And
there's five investigations that show the same thing. And Brett Kavanaugh is just part of the people that said, hey, the facts, just like you said, led up to this. And this is what he's been getting beaten up on by the right for.
Yeah, and it, I can tell you, it's just it's conspiracy theory nuttery. It is so far away from the facts. People are taking two different things: the fact that the White House panicked when his body was found, mm-hmm. and kept the FBI out from his files, mm-hmm. and emptied his file cabinets and hid the Rose law firm billing records. That's one thing. But this man was found in Fort Marcy Park with his gun right there, with his prints on the gun. He had a history of major depression. He had talked increasingly about suicide in the previous couple of days. Every single thing said he did it in the park with his revolver.
It's like the game of Clue. But and if you're just joining us, talking to Quinn Hillier, and you want to see the full piece on this, of course, go to WashingtonExaminer.com or the link on the Twitter feed for FM Talk 106.5 or for Quinn. This is a weird place, and I feel, you know, very strange about this, because I find myself, and listen, I'm pretty new to Brett Kavanaugh, not like you. I haven't known him. I wasn't putting blog posts up in 2006, but just when I
read talking to him in 1997.
Yeah, and talking to him in 97 and on. But I do feel like I do a lot of times when I talk about Attorney General Sessions, when I'm talking about Kavanaugh, that somebody's doing something by the letter of the law, and it's making all the partisan sides on both sides very angry.
Absolutely. And let me say this now. People are going to say, okay, well, you're just covering up for Kavanaugh either way. No, I'm not. He was not, repeat, not my first choice.
Right. In fact, you said that on the air. You said that was not.
He was not. Of Trump's 25, he was about 20 on my
list. He's not your boy. He's not your boy, but you like him.
I like him. He's a good and decent right. man and a good and decent judge.
Right.
And while I don't think he was the best choice, he is a good choice. But I am not inclined to go to the mat for Kavanaugh because I'm somehow Kavanaugh's buddy. I've actually sat down with him only once in my life.
But you know, what you're doing is you're telling us that these are things that you know that are truthful, that are not being told.
20 years of slightly knowing him, mostly by phone, and of following his judicial career, and having been somebody intimately involved with the investigations into the Clintons. Remember, I literally edited the single most important book ever written against the Clintons. I was the editor of the book. So you right. can't say that I want to help somebody cover up the Clintons' misdoings.
Right. Since you and I met, you have been pretty steady, just to say an understatement, on the attacks on the Clintons. And, I mean, to get back things to what the FBI did and Foster's office and all those things, there was a bunch of, and I've read what you, there's a bunch of funny business going on.
Right.
And you have walked through it, whether it be the law firm or the dealings there, all that has been laid out. The only thing you're saying is that in the facts of your investigation, you're not exonerating anybody. You're saying, but Vince Foster killed himself.
Vince Foster killed
himself. And that's what Brett Kavanaugh said his facts had led him up to in that report as well. And that's what this guy's getting beaten up about.
Exactly. And look, there is absolutely definitive proof of what Kavanaugh concluded. He was the lead author of the Foster report. He was not the lead author of the Starr report against Clinton, but he was the lead author of the Foster report, and that thing was as airtight as anything I've ever seen in my life.
All right. Well, there we go. I'll get your take on it. I will say this. With all that being said, does he get confirmed?
Yes, although I think it could be 50-50 with a tie break by Mike Pence. I think it could be that close. I think you'll probably get 51-52, but it really could go down to a tie-breaking vote by Pence, but I think he does get through.
Yeah, I wonder about that, because if you do hit a certain number, it grows, in my best guess. Like, there's no Democrat that wants to sign on
right.
to be the 50th vote, but if all the Republicans are in...
But they might not all be.
Right, but if they were, then you'd see some Democrats maybe get in who needed it, you know, like a Doug Jones or a...
I think the Democrats actually stick together on this one.
Even Doug Jones. All right, Quinn, as always, we appreciate your time. People want to read more about this, I guess, Washington Examiner. They want to pick up the two of the three in the trilogy of Mad Jones.
Yes, it's the Accidental Prophet trilogy. The books are Mad Jones Heretic, Mad Jones Hero, and soon Mad Jones Agonistes, available at Amazon.com.
All right, very good. Thank you. We'll talk again next week. Coming right back, more of Midday Mobile. Baldwin County Commissioner running for State Senate in the runoff on Tuesday. Chris Elliott joins us next. Plus, Gerald Dial, you know, the one that had the catchiest song of the primary season. He's going to join us in studio in the 1 o'clock hour as well as we continue to meet the candidates right here on Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. News is next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:36, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Text line, phone line, 343-0106, 343-0106. Reminder, too, all the podcasts we do, like 40 hours a week now, 40-plus, especially this time of year when you're getting to meet the candidates, hear their stories. And if you don't catch something, you hear about it, you want to share it with a friend, don't worry. Real easy to get a la carte podcast by going to fmtalk1065.com and just click the link for podcast. All right, good to get Chris Elliott, Baldwin County Commissioner, back in studio and talk about a little bit about Baldwin County Commission, but a lot about what comes up on Tuesday as the we are now in the waning days of this runoff for the primary. Chris, thanks for coming in.
Glad to be here.
And a lot here. I'll say this. I look at the text line all the time. People say, what in the heck is going on? This is more attention than we've ever seen for 32.
It is. It's an important seat, and it needs to be filled by somebody who understands what's going on in Baldwin County. And I think that's what you're seeing is folks being very engaged, very interested. And we have been
talking. That's an understatement. This is in my recollection, the busiest I've ever seen a run for 32.
Well, I think you see a couple things coming all together at the same time, right? We just got done getting screwed with the BP money.
Right,
okay?
Right.
So we have been talking about from the very beginning something called Get Our Share, right? Mm-hmm. We've had a website up for almost a year now saying getourshare.com, talking about our plan to make sure we go to Montgomery and get some of the billions of dollars in economic benefit that we're sending north back to Baldwin County.
Yeah, people don't think about that, how the state, if y'all don't have a business open in Baldwin County that's collecting that sales tax, it never gets to Montgomery.
That's exactly right. And that's the whole point here. As a county commissioner, and that's why I'm running, Sean, as a county commissioner, I have watched the State Department of Transportation, heck, the state of Alabama as a whole, beg Baldwin County, what are you going to put in on this road? What are you going to put in on this road? It's your state road.
Yeah.
181 is your road. 98's your road. 31 is your road. Yet in Baldwin County, the taxpayers have been having to supplement that in order to get it done. And it shouldn't be that way. We send $4 to $5 billion in economic benefit north every year. We've got to get that back, and that's why we've got to have somebody that understands those issues, that understands the importance of that, and that's why you have not only the interest in this race, but also you have some statewide candidates who are now here saying, oh, we need to make sure. This is now an issue in statewide races. Yeah, we've got to make sure Baldwin County gets its share.
Where were they all back when Baldwin County wasn't getting its own share at Mobile County? But I'll just leave it at that.
Sure.
Okay. So, you listen, there's a lot of people say, I agree with you, Chris. We got to get our share. We've got to do something in there. I don't care how good you are at your job. If there's one of you walking in to Montgomery saying, hey, y'all, listen to me. Here's what we're going to do. Man, that... You'd be yelling at a wall.
Well, you could be. If you send David Northcutt up there, you'll be yelling at a wall. There's no question about it. As a matter of fact, that's what's been told to me by the Senate leadership, and that's exactly what's going to happen. If he goes up there, his relationships are so poor, Baldwin County will not get what it needs. There's no question about it. You've seen it. He was on your show yesterday. Mm-hmm. He was talking about how the dentists even hate him and how, you know, they're all against him and it's a big fight. I mean, the guy hadn't even gotten there and he's made everybody mad yet. Let's not send that guy. Okay, let's send the guy who's got a proven track record of building consensus, getting things done.
Can you get a coalition built?
Absolutely. There's no question about that. I've been working with Mobile legislators for some time now. We've been working across the state through the County Commission Association. We've got great relationships statewide. But it is a fundamental difference in priority and execution. David Northcutt said he's a dentist. He knows how to cause pain, and he's going to go to Montgomery and cause pain. Sean, do you think for 1 second that's going to be effective? He told a crowd at a debate that he was going to go up there and slash the tires of anybody that didn't agree with him.
It's an interesting political tact to have.
Do you think that for 1 second that's going to get Baldwin County its fair share?
No, that's why I ask about building coalitions, because we can get as frustrated as we want to down here. I've been doing that a long time. But we're outmatched if we just show up and say, I mean, we've seen it. Look what just happened.
You're absolutely right. And that's what we saw.
I'd like it to be different, but it's not.
That's exactly what we saw in BP, and that's what we will see again with other non-tax revenue sources like Go Mesa. We've talked about it I don't know how many times.
Yes.
That's next. If we don't send
Go Mesa is the money that's coming in through the oil and natural gas pipelines that are coming in.
Correct.
From Southwest Alabama.
Correct. They're lease revenues, and that's what's so critical to make sure we protect that. We make sure it's spent in coastal Alabama, and it's not funneled off to other places.
Hey, speaking of spending in coastal Alabama, not saying it was good. We're an extended news break, but you're running a little bit late getting in here because you said you were backed up in the tunnel.
I was. You know, it's frustrating. I left Fairhope. We had a Metropolitan Planning Organization meeting over there. I'm the chairman of that. I left there right at about an hour ago.
Wow. So
I just made it in time.
This is a very clunky segue into a talk about the bridge and where do we stand now? If those people are going to come get, if they're getting money from us and not giving back, to ask them for some money for a project, that's got, you know, I mean, what is the person in Scottsboro? How do you convince that person? What's the person in Dothan? What do they care if we have a bridge or not?
Well, a lot of those people vacation on the Gulf Coast, so let's make sure we know that too. But the state has got to realize, and they've got to have somebody that explains it to them in a way that they can. Firm, but with some facts behind it that says, listen, guys, this is what we're generating. The way to grow the pie for everybody else in Alabama, in Scottsboro or Wilcox County or whatever else, is to grow the pie here in Baldwin County in coastal Alabama. You get a bigger piece when the pie grows. Mm-hmm. Let's do it that way. And you mentioned the bridge. This is something we've been working on for 4 years. I've been working on personally for 4 years. Was on the original design selection committee. You know, you and I talked about it when I was in D.C., making sure we argue for infra grants and TIFIA funding and pushing the private the public-private partnership, et cetera. I mean, that's the way to get this done. That's how this is going to get done. And we are, according to John Cooper, I talked to him just yesterday.
You told me that when would we start with this?
We will start construction on this next year. They will let this project and start construction on this next year. The ALDOT director has assured me personally this is moving forward. All of the internal workings that I see show it moving forward on this, and the governor's committed to it.
Okay. You understand that my long-term cynicism with this project, right?
I absolutely okay. do. Right. I have been doubtful of it, but having been on the inside...
They said they will consider it. They said, we are doing this. Aldott said, we are doing this.
We are doing this. We are committed to it. We will do anything we have to do with any funding source we need in order to make this happen.
All right. While we're talking funding, this is different in the political realm, but your opponent, David Northcutt, was in here yesterday, and he said, yeah, look at where funding's come from. He said, Chris Elliott's taking money from the AEA. Now, first of all, I thought the AEA was broke, but this is interesting. Are you taking money from the AEA?
Absolutely.
You are.
And I'm taking money from the small business folks. I'm taking money from builders and contractors, public accountants, nurse anesthetists.
You can say that word. I can't even say that word.
And dentists, Sean. I am telling you, one thing David Northcutt has got right is that everybody is not on his team. Think about that for just a second. Of all those folks I just named, there's one that I left out and I want to point out to it, okay? Alpha. One of my biggest and earliest supporters were the Farmers Federation, okay? The most anti-tax people that there are out there,
mm-hmm.
okay? We have support across the board. That's the consensus building I'm talking about. We're getting support from literally everybody. And there haven't been any promises or assurances made or anything like that. They just want to make sure that there is a good legislator who is competent and effective in that seat.
All right. We can talk more about this when we get back. Remind folks, too, if they want to get more information here between now and Tuesday on the web, on social media, where do they go?
They need to go to electchriselliott.com, and that'll get you to where we're going, or they can just search for Elect Chris Elliott on Facebook.
All right. Coming right back. More with Chris Elliott right here on Midday Mobile. Got a question? You can text it in as well at 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll get to that when we return.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
At 12:51, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Remember, this weekend, we get started with the big rodeo next week, Thursday night with the Liars Contest, but the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament is Saturday, and talking to Justin Thompson with the JCs, with the rodeo guys. Remember this, too. If you don't get a chance to get your ticket for the kids rodeo, it's okay. Go fishing, and you can pick up your ticket even after you fish at the rodeo site. Get those kids up there, let them enter those fish, and it's $5 for a ticket, gets you your lunch and an ice cream. And sometimes, I may or may not know this, that dads can give some like $5 and get ice cream themselves. Hey, it's going on this weekend, the Roy Martin Young Anglers Tournament, in conjunction with the 85th annual Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo. Continue our conversation with Baldwin County Commissioner and candidate for State Senate Chris Elliott, and we talked about this. You said you're going to get the fair share for Baldwin by building coalitions in Montgomery. That's your marching orders.
That's it. Absolutely. That's my number one goal.
And I want to ask this too, because in doing that, it seems like the lament of so many listeners, and there's text coming in right now for y'all to knock off the mudslinging. And I lament on there, too, that in times that that's being done, we're not talking about things like, okay, how are you going to do this? What is your plan? What is your plan? Let's compare the two plans. I mean, it seems to not exist anymore in the political spectrum, at least in the debate.
Sure. Well, I think you heard yesterday on your show that my opponent doesn't have a plan. That's part of the problem. I mean, his entire focus is going to Montgomery so he can change dental laws so he can make more money. He wants underpaid dental hygienists and dental assistants to perform medical procedures. That's why the Dental Association is so against him. His own association. He has no plan for the future of Baldwin County and how to get our fair share. That is the difference between us. If you want somebody who can go up there and talk about roads, bridges, infrastructure, illegal immigrants, you know, if you want to talk about the real issues, I'm your candidate. Go look for David Northcutt's plan. It doesn't exist. There is no plan.
Let's talk about some of the things in Montgomery you lined about that I'm interested in. And speaking of the fair share, brings me to the question of budgeting in Montgomery. And I mean, listen, this is the I feel silly even doing it because I've been complaining about this for a long time and nothing changes. But 93% of the budget is earmarked in Montgomery. I mean, if any of us ran our businesses that way, we'd be out of business. I mean, you got to allocate money over here this year and you got to move it over there next year. But that's not the story in Montgomery.
It's crazy. I mean, to run a state like we do is absolutely insane. But it's also crazy to say, I'm going to go up there and un-earmark 93% of the state budget on day one. I mean,
right. You can't do it. You can't do it. Right. I am a pragmatic guy. But the chances are looking better than normal, right? A third of the folks on Goat Hill will be new this year.
It is better than we've had in the past, that's for sure.
I mean, you're still the away team. There's still two-thirds of the Goat Hill advantage. But.
Yeah, but I've always thought there was a third there that had some sense. So if you do the average, I think there's hope. But you have to do it peeling an onion. And listen, I know that's not sexy. I know it's so much better to come in here and say, we got to stop earmarking.
Right.
Of course you do. But you just don't have any credibility when you say something like that. You don't know what you're talking about when you say, I'm going to go up there and tell everybody in Montgomery, hey, I'm here, I'm a dentist, and you've been doing it wrong the whole time. Right. I mean, where do you think that's going to get you?
But at least that the onion would be being peeled.
Well, and I'm fully committed
because
to that.
There's some low-hanging fruit, if we stay with the food analogies, low-hanging fruit on some of the earmarked things. I think you could build some consensus out there to say, you know what, let's just try this one.
Sure. Well, let's take ALDOT's budget, for example. Did you know the Administrative Office of the Courts is getting a significant portion of its funding from ALDOT?
I did not.
This doesn't make any sense. Yeah, they're getting tens of millions of dollars from ALDOT every year.
And then we're
over here freaking out about why ALDOT doesn't have enough money. I mean, those are the types of decisions that we have got to stop making.
Why wouldn't you just give the money to the court?
Thank you. Exactly. The problem is it's based off court fines. I mean, you've got to understand how the onion's built to peel it, right?
Right.
And that's the experience that I bring to the table. I have been able to do this at the county commission level. We saved $40 million, Sean, in my tenure on the county commission just by doing things smarter and looking at how
I've heard you talk about that before. I mean, how do you Is that just recycling paper clips? It's got to be a little bigger than that, Chris.
Oh, no, it's looking at a wilderness camp up in North Baldwin that had 48 kids and 62 employees. That's more than we have sheriff's patrol deputies, okay? 62 employees. Total cost was over $6 million a year. We shut it down, privatized the thing, and guess what? The service is still there. The service is still there for the kids that need it. We're not taking kids from out of county for free, which is what we were doing before, okay? And we laid off 62 people. The headcount is going down in employees while we continue to have growth and need for more services in Baldwin County. Those are the types of trends you want to see. That is the type of proven leadership that I'll bring to the state Senate.
All right. This text comes in, and they obviously know the buttons to push with me as I was talking about issues in Montgomery. Where would you stand on getting the state out of the retail and wholesale liquor business?
That's another hot-button one, and I completely understand where people are coming from on that. I'll just tell you right now, I don't necessarily have an opinion on that. I'm not going to shoot from the hip and tell you I've got an opinion on it. I'm going to get in there, figure out what's right to do, and apply my good judgment and make a decision.
All right. Well, if you are elected and you want anybody to bounce ideas off, I'm right here. I got one or two ideas about.
I listen to your show. I'm familiar with what your opinion is on it.
Let's see here. And this is more. Can I ask you some Baldwin County Commission questions here? All right. Traffic issues when the new lodge opens and the new motel and convention center being built on 59 and Beach Road. What happens to traffic problem there?
We need a Cross Island Parkway. Got to have a Cross Island Parkway. That goes from Canal Road across Pleasure Island, right, and dumps straight onto the Beach Road there. And that's something that Mayor Kennan, my good friend, Jeff Boyd, who has endorsed me, is a big proponent of that. We are going to work on a Cross Island Parkway together, and we're going to get that done.
But there are some obstructions.
There's more than one.
Yeah, codified obstructions, right? I mean,
there was a lawsuit, and basically there are some ways to get through it on existing county right of way or county easements, and we intend to figure out a way to make that happen. But that's exactly, you know, the kind of problem solving that I can bring to the state Senate is figuring out a way to address those issues, and that's exactly what we'll do.
All right, Chris, thank you for your time. Baldwin County Commissioner and candidate for state Senate in the runoff coming up on Tuesday. Chris Elliott, people. people want to go once again online?
ElectChrisElliott.com, or they can go to GetOurShare.com, or they can see us on Facebook at Elect Chris Elliott.
All right, very good. Thank you for stopping by. And Gerald Dahl joins us next. I got to see if I can get his theme music queued up before he gets in here. That is the catchiest song of the primary, for sure. 1258. We'll be right back.